Welcome to Quimper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy this recording from our June 26th service. Ed Rabot's topic is Sailing and the Wisdom of Insecurity. Thanks for listening.
Alan Watts once said, "For the poets have seen the truth that life, change, movement, and insecurity are so many names for the same thing. To resist change, to try to cling to life, to try to be secure, is therefore like holding your breath. The only way to make sense of change is to plunge into it, move with it, and join the dance." Carl Sagan once said, "Far better, it seems to me, in our vulnerability and insecurity, is to look death in the eye and to be grateful every day for the brief but magnificent opportunity that life provides." Jimmy Buffett once said, "Once a Zen teacher told me about living in the now, being in the moment, and how all the happiness we will ever have is already inside of us. After some silence and a smile, I said, 'I know, I'm a sailor.' Even now, with 1,000 little voyages, I still feel a memorable chill when casting off or lifting anchor." Sailing, according to the Sailing Dictionary, is the fine art of getting wet and becoming ill, while slowly going nowhere at great expense. Yet a house is but a poorly built boat that has already run aground. So what's a person to do if he or she is looking for a little bit of security? Sailing has changed my life, literally and figuratively, but most of all spiritually. Solo sailing especially has done so, because solo sailing is the only situation in which the skipper does not immediately blame the crew for every little thing that goes wrong. Isn't that why skippers have first mates anyway? In sailing alone, the skipper is completely reliant upon self and working with the many forces of nature, the cosmos as it is, which is in a constant state of change. There is no one else to fault. One must face alone the impermanence and the insecurity and manage one's fears and have the faith in self to deal with the constant change, the challenges, the hazards, and the potential traumas. I have to digress a minute and tell you a little incident I had with some insecurity on a sailboat. 4.5 years ago, I had an opportunity to sail across the Atlantic Ocean as one of a four-man crew. I didn't know much about the skipper. I had just met him for an hour or so in Houston, Texas when I was down there, and he had bought this $1.4 million 54-foot brand-new boat in France. And the boat was in Gibraltar in a slip, and he wanted to sail it to the United States. And he was looking for crew. And I'm thinking, gee, here's a real opportunity. So I raised my hand and volunteered. And with a short interview, he decided I was capable of being his first mate. Well, I met him and the other two guys in Dallas. We got on a plane and flew to London and on to Gibraltar. And we got to the boat. And the first thing the skipper did is he went down into his skipper's cabin and came out with a T-shirt. His T-shirt read, "Rush Limbaugh Rules." And I immediately thought, what have I gotten myself into? Well, one thing led to another. Next thing I know, I'm on the open water, and we sailed from Gibraltar to the Canary Islands, which took 5 days, and it was pretty miserable. I got seasick. It was terrible. Bad weather, lots of wind, storms. And we began to have some problems. We got to the Canary Islands, and we were going to be there a couple of weeks, getting ready for this big crossing. We were actually joining a bunch of other boats, so we weren't going to do it alone. We were actually in a group, which added to some safety. During this time, I had already purchased, that's a long story, a plane ticket. I had a plane ticket in my back pocket from the Canary Islands back to Houston. And many times I thought about taking it. But I thought, no, I'm not going to let these guys, ruin my experience. I decided I'm going to stick it out. Well, we finally left, and we were 16 days in the open ocean. And all the other boats disappeared. I mean, we rarely ever saw one of the other 200 boats out there because we just spread out and we're going our own way. And there were several times I had conflict with the skipper. And he was about 6'4", and outweighed me 100 pounds. And talking about feeling insecure, when I was on watch at night, I often wondered if he was going to come out there and throw me overboard, and that'd be it. I would disappear into the bowels of the Atlantic Ocean. But I made it. But that's a whole different kind of insecurity, the type that I really didn't expect to have. Let me give you a little personal history. I've been told that that's what we're supposed to do up here. By the way, it's getting a little warmer all the time. I was raised to achieve and please others, starting with dear old dad. He was a combat officer from the Battle of the Bulge, got seriously wounded, almost killed. And so he was raising me. I was the oldest son, the oldest of two, and there were a lot of expectations. I did that until I was about 25 years old, when I was in the U.S. Air Force as a first lieutenant. And one day, my colonel, he was my direct supervisor. I mean, how many first lieutenants have a full colonel as their immediate supervisor? Usually, you go up the chain of command. But because of my position and the fact that I was doing the job of three different officers, I reported directly to him. And one day, he pulled me aside and he said, "Lieutenant," he says, "I'm putting you on, you have been placed on the fast burner list at headquarters U.S. Air Force in Washington, D.C. at the Pentagon." And my response was, "Huh, sir?" I had no idea what he was talking about. And he said, "Well, it's a secret list. We identify young officers early in their career, and we put them on this list, and they get assigned special training, special assignments, and positions to increase their responsibility." And he said, "The goal is for you to become a 4-star general." And I started shaking in my feet. In my knees, and I went home and talked to my wife at the time, and I said, "You know, I just don't know if I can handle this." I was already had been experiencing a lot of signs of stress and anxiety, and I began to fear that I would fail to meet expectations and basically be afraid of failure, something I always experienced with my father growing up because he had very high expectations. At the age of 27, my first wife left me, and I even considered suicide as I was being promoted to captain. Eventually, I realized I had to find another way to be, or I was doomed. For most of my life, in order to avoid disappointing others, and manage the anxiety and insecurity brought on by fear of failure. I'm sorry, guys, I'm getting overheated here. I gotta get a little cooler. Oops, I forgot this. No, I'm not. I even brought some flip-flops. Okay. Like I said, we sailors, we have to be adaptable or we don't survive out there. Okay. I needed to control everything and everyone around me. I was trained as a military officer to lead and dominate others, to be in charge, to know what was best, and to force others to think like me and do what I say. It was my job, and it was survival, at least in my own mind. For others to be different, to think different from me, or to not accept my logic, opinion, and procedures was a message to me of defiance and mutiny, and of impending danger. It could also mean that I had failed, that I am not okay, and that something is wrong with me. In summary, I had been trained ever since childhood to be a pain in the arse, both to myself and others. I was also looking for security outside of myself. I needed constant external approval through achievement in my work, my possessions, you know, drive a nice sports car, have a nice house, and all of that. Life became a series of what-ifs as I worried about the future. I was constantly afraid that something would go wrong. I did not trust myself to be able to cope with such matters, so I was constantly vigilant to avoid the possibilities of such events. I took everything too seriously, trying to make things happen, cluttering my life with matters not important. As a result, I constrained myself and avoided experiencing life. I felt hollow, as if something was missing inside. I believed that I just was not good enough to enjoy life. I wondered, is this all there is? Life for me was an internalized collection of shoulds and musts, which originated from what I perceived others wanted from me, whether they were real or imagined. I had never discovered who I was. I was not even aware of my own feelings, my own thoughts, my own values. I just felt like I was constantly living to take care and please others. And of course, this is exactly what the Air Force was looking for. I felt like I was a shell with nothing inside. I would this pour this over me to cool off, but I shampooed the carpets up here, so I don't want to undo all that work I did. Then one day, I sailed a little boat. It was a sunfish. Many of you may know what they are. They're like a giant, big surfboard with a mast sticking out the top and a centerboard sticking through the bottom and a rudder you hang off the back. I was an instructor in the Air Force, and one of my students was on his way from a permanent change of station from San Antonio, Texas, to Maine, northern Maine. He said, "You want to go sailing?" I say, I'd grown up with motorboats. I mean, I was water skiing when I was six. I was driving motorboats of all sizes from the time I was about five. Never knew what a sailboat was like or what it meant. So he took me out on this little thing, on this pond we had in Wichita Falls, Texas. And I was just hooked. We got off the boat at the end of the afternoon, and he said, "You know, I've been thinking about selling this because I don't think I'll get a lot of use of it in Maine. Because you get wet on this boat all the time. I mean, you literally go sailing in a swimsuit because you know you're going to get wet." I bought it from him that night. I had to have it. And that was the beginning of my sailing career. This was also about the time I made a decision to get out of the Air Force and take a complete change of direction in my life. I went back to school and became a mental health counselor and retired with the Department of Veterans Affairs, working with post-traumatic stress disorder with veterans, as well as community mental health centers, nursing homes, and that sort of thing. I even did a little stint in Child Protective Services. In addition to the thrills and challenges of this little boat, there was something mystical and indefinable that connected me to the universe from where I came and to which I will return someday. It also taught me the spiritually based science of working with the forces of nature instead of trying to overcome them or defeat them. There's an intense connection one must make with the cosmos, the sun in the sky, the wind, the tides, the current, the waves, and all the other natural and unnatural hazards that await a sailor. And I had to be aware of the response of my boat to all of these forces, as well as to my touch with the sails and the rudder. I felt as though I became one with the boat. This connection requires one to focus the mind on the natural world. I could not control things around me, which is what I'd been trying to do all of my life. But I learned that I could adapt and cope with the constantly changing conditions around my boat and me. Not until decades later did I begin to realize the lessons that sailing was beginning to teach me from that very first day. What I now realize is that sailing is a metaphor for living, for accepting and managing its unavoidable insecurity. One of the greatest sources of insecurity on a sailboat is the boom, as defined in the sailing dictionary to be a laterally mounted pole to which a sail is fastened and is used during jibing to shift crew members to a fixed, horizontal, and often wet position. Yes, I have been whacked in the head on occasion. In rough weather, I actually put on a helmet to protect my head. The first and most important, perhaps the most important lesson, is that permanence and security are myths. In sailing, as in life, we are never completely secure. The constantly changing marine elements, breakage of sailboat systems. By the way, when we were on that $1.4 million boat crossing the Atlantic, things were breaking constantly. And the list was growing longer and longer, and I'm thinking, gee, I hope we're going to make it. We did, but we had such a long list of things broken and sails ripped and this and that that I really wondered for a while. So even expensive boats break. In fact, I think they break a whole lot more often than cheaper boats. Even the possibility of anchors and moorings dragging or breaking renders complete security a myth when you're on a boat. Even at anchor and asleep, one must be ready for unpredictable surprises. A sudden squall, both in sailing and in life, can arise at any moment from an unexpected quadrant on the compass and strike us down like the boom on a sailboat. In life, we may believe the myth that some things are permanent or that security is possible. We may go about our daily lives assuming it is so, and then suddenly life knocks us for a loop. Alan Watts, in his book called The Wisdom of Insecurity, states, "Accepting the reality that impermanence and insecurity are inescapable and inseparable from life is the path to the highest happiness and supreme spiritual insight and certitude." So how does one begin to cope with a life's insecurity and find some joy amongst all the calamities, the horrors, and the traumas? And how does sailing help with that process? Transcendence, peak experience, transformation, nirvana. There are many words that try to describe what sailing has provided for me. It is best described by a process that is condensed into the phrase, be here now. We are what we pay attention to. Most of the time, we are not attending to the cosmos around us or even to ourselves. We are thinking about yesterday, later today or tomorrow, musts and shoulds, and a multitude of other manners, often being addressed at the same time. We call it multitasking, in which the mind is divided and not fully focused on any one issue. and our complicated society encourages and often requires it. We develop habits to be more efficient in our brain usage, but may fail to consider other ways of being and doing. We may become automatons and let life pass by, wrapped up in performing, impressing, living up to expectations, both real and imagined, and trapped in being and doing in ways that have simply become a habit. Even when allegedly participating in a leisure activity, whether alone or with others, we often have our minds elsewhere. While hiking, I may be worrying about a meeting tomorrow or giving a sermon on Sunday or something along that line. While bird watching, I may be thinking about yesterday's events instead of the birds' activities. And in group activities, have you ever noticed how so many people converse about issues that have nothing to do with why you're out in nature? They're not focused on the activity. They're talking about other things. Their mind is somewhere else. They are listening to each other, not focusing the five senses and truly experiencing the activity. Slowly, I am discovering that life is best when I am in one place at a time, when I can completely focus on being here now. It is hard to shut down the thoughts of other matters, but it helps by tuning into the five senses. If I am having some thoughts, I'll redirect my thinking by asking myself, what am I seeing, smelling, touching, tasting, and hearing right now? What is going on in the cosmos? What are the forces that are happening at this moment? And that helps me be here now. While actually sailing, my focus is on all these forces and conditions that are affecting me. It is an absolute requirement while under sail. For the greatest calamities have befallen me when my thoughts drifted away from being here now. Even when at anchor and with the help of some red wine, I experience these peak experiences of feeling at one with the universe. I find it impossible to put into words. Alan Watts once said, "Words and ideas cannot plumb the ultimate mystery of life. That reality, which he calls his God, cannot be comprehended by the finite human mind." He experiences his God by immersing himself into the here and now. Meditation does a similar thing, teaches us to shut down the thinking and just let our existence connect with the cosmos. Dr. Watts goes on to say, "To be aware of reality, of the living present, is to discover that, at each moment, the experience is all. There is nothing else besides it, no experience of you experiencing the experience." A simple example. I'm walking through the woods or wherever, and here's a rose. I go to smell the rose, and it's real easy to start thinking, "Oh, that smells so nice, what a lovely scent." These are thoughts. When I'm having these thoughts, I'm not totally experiencing the smell, the aroma of the rose. So I simply try to stop the thinking and inhale and simply experience the aroma without thinking about it, talking about it, or whatever. Sailing is a setting for me to connect with the cosmos, the universe, my God, which for me can never be completely comprehended. I listen to the wind, and the wind tells me what to do. What is wind? That sailing dictionary defines wind as air in motion, the source of power for sailboats. There are three winds of interest to the sailor: the true wind, which is the wind experienced when you're on land; the apparent wind, which is the wind direction you experience when you're actually on a moving boat; and the ideal or helpful wind, which is the theoretical, non-existent wind, wind blowing from the exact opposite direction of the true wind. And actually, the dictionary describes a fourth wind called a zephyr, which is a warm, pleasant breeze named after the mythical Greek god of wishful thinking, false hopes, and unreliable forecasts. I actually think there's a fifth wind. I call it the damn wind. Because when it's not blowing the way I want it to, that's my label for it. That was one of my greatest frustrations in sailing at first, was when the wind would die or whatever, I'd just get really upset, you know. And I finally came up with a little rethink. You know, it's like I'm sitting out here in the middle of the harbor, or excuse me, in the middle of the bay or whatever. The wind's not blowing. I'm just kind of bobbing around. But it's beautiful. There's fish swimming around. There's seals, dolphins, maybe whales, mountains in the distance. And it's like, hey, I got to be someplace. Might as well be here. So rather than start the motor and get impatient and have that noise drown out what's really going on in the cosmos, I just drop the sails and sit there with my binoculars, maybe listen to some music, maybe pull out a good book. When I was in Maine sailing, we had lobster pots everywhere. If you've ever been to Maine out on the water, it's just lobster buoys, you know, colorful buoys everywhere. And when you're bobbing along with no wind, you might drift over one and get it snagged on your rudder or your propeller or something like that. So that was a bit of a problem. Until one day I thought, hey, I'm just going to pick up one of these buoys, tie it to the bow, and use it as a temporary mooring out in the middle of the bay. It worked beautifully. So I just sit there, tied up to a lobster trap, hoping the lobsterman didn't come up and ask me what I was doing with his lobster trap, because they're cowboys up in Maine. They carry guns. I mean, they have shootouts on the water occasionally. You don't want to get on the wrong side of a lobster person. And one time, one actually did come up, and I told him what I was doing, and he said, okay, as long as you don't drag my trap away from the area. And I said, don't worry, I'll watch to see if I'm dragging, and if so, I'll drop that one and pick up a different one. Hopefully, it's got a bigger weight on it. But gotta be someplace, might as well be here. Just calms me down. It's like, be patient, wait for the forces of nature to begin to change, and they will, they always do. While sailing, I must focus on the elements of nature outside of myself, not to control them, which is impossible, or fight them, but to listen to what they tell me. I must search for the truth and meaning of each element, not to pass judgment, but to respond in a compassionate and understanding way. In other words, cursing the wind because it is not blowing the way I want it to is a failure to listen, understand, and respond appropriately to life. I must listen to understand, empathize more, and talk less in all lessons of life. This is one of the greatest lessons that sailing continues to teach me. I cannot control the wind, but I can adjust my sails. Richard Bodie, possible distant cousin of our beloved minister, in his book, First You Have to Row a Little Boat, states, as humans, we live with a constant presumption of dominion, that we have everything under our firm control. But the sailor knows all too well the fallacy of this view. He knows he is not sovereign of earth, sea, and sky. The sailor responds to the subtle shifting of the wind, the ebbing of the tide, and the constantly arising obstacles and hazards. He changes course and trims the sheets. He sails. In sailing as in life, we must accept the reality that control of everything is not only impossible, but unnecessary, undesirable, and even can be harmful. Trying to control our fate destroys the experience of connecting with the cosmos, of being at one with the web of life that surrounds and nurtures each of us. From the acceptance of this reality, I can adapt and act to work with these elements in order to exist within that web of nature, not to dominate or resist. My sailboat is an extension of myself. I am one with her as we team up to adjust and adapt within the web of these forces. As you use, our principles call for this respect of the web of life, which includes listening to the elements, searching for truth and meaning, and responding to others in thoughtful, compassionate, and caring ways. UU principles do not call for attempts to control or dominate. To do so is the ultimate in disrespect. Sailors know that not every storm is overwhelming unless we make it so in our minds. Life is not about waiting out every storm to pass. It's about sailing in the wind and rain. However, sometimes the elements of the cosmos are so overwhelming that even our best efforts to adjust and adapt may be insufficient. At these times, sailors look for a safe harbor, a retreat to allow the storm to pass, to replenish needs, and to adapt with new knowledge and skills. I learned, despite the trauma, that day-to-day life is not necessarily a series of crises and calamities. It is like the wind and all of its infinite variations in moods. The wind and life circumstances are shifting constantly. Now I gotta raise the sunglasses, the sun's moving on. Constantly shifting, just as we are. Ourselves are constantly shifting in our moods, thoughts, and developing ability to adapt. Each storm survives and enables us to cope better with the next. Since I gave up hope, I feel much better. Since I gave up hope, I feel much better. The first time I saw that was on a bumper sticker in Austin, Texas, in 1983. The car belonged to a fellow that I worked with. He was a colleague. Found out he was a Vietnam combat veteran, came back with some severe problems, post-traumatic stress type, got in a lot of bar fights, was looking at a prison term, and the judge said, "What are you going to do?" And he said, "I don't know." And he decided, "I'm just going to disappear for a while." He had a friend who had some land in Colorado up in the mountains, and he decided for a year he was going to live off the land. And during the spring, he hiked up to the top, built a log cabin with his own hands. The only thing he carried on a donkey was a little wood-burning stove. Everything else, he either found it, grew it, or whatever, and he stayed up there a year. He came back down and he said, "You know, I gave up the hope of ever being normal again, of ever going back to being the person that I was before I went to Vietnam. And I began to get a little better. I began to deal with my problems instead of being angry with myself all the time and angry with the world for what had happened to me and for what I had done, or what I saw and didn't do anything about." You can go on and on and on. He says, "I gave up the hope of returning to the way things were like. I gave up the hope of being normal." And at this stage in his life, he had gone back to school, got his PhD, and he and I were teaching, were management instructors for the state of Texas. And he is absolutely the best fellow instructor I ever worked with, and we became good friends. He gave me a copy of that bumper sticker, and I've kept it with me ever since. Sailing has taught me to give up the hope for the impossible or for harmful goals and expectations. Sailing has helped me give up the hope for security, the hope for permanence, the hope for certainty and predictability. It's helped me give up the hope for complete and final resolutions to problems. And most of all, it's helped me give up the hope of controlling everyone and everything around me. And I feel much better. To the extent that I give up hope for the impossible, I am freed from the anxiety and fear that has permeated so much of my life. I am freed to enjoy the moment, the experience before me. I am free to connect with my God, the universe, the cosmos. And I hope I may be a little easier person to be around during this process. But don't take my word for it. Ask my wife, Beverly, or my good friend, Becky, my daughter, Lillian, or my brother, Dick, who's been putting up with me for 67 years. Being the kind people that they are, they will likely say that I'm still a work in progress. As you use, we should all be a work in progress. This is the wisdom of insecurity. Thank you.